skeletal forms burn toxic green. Vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire.
Everyone, and welcome to the second episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies.
Okay, so
we are your hosts.
We are your hosts, Caitlin
and Jenny,
and we love being scared.
We love it.
We want to be scared, and we absolutely love horror movies. Gory ones, supernatural ones, devil-worshipping ones, ridiculous guilty pleasures, and absolute classics. We want to talk about them all. Join us.
We want you to listen.
We do. Join us on our podcast as we give you our feminist take on movies in our informal, funny, hilarious, hopefully, style. So come horror it up with us every Wednesday. This week. Fresh off the presses.
Well, we have literally just finished watching what I thought was, you know, a 90s classic that everyone had seen, and apparently somehow it slipped you.
Didn't see it, no. I wasn't allowed to watch scary movies when I was young. So this movie,
I'm younger than you and I saw it.
Oh no, this movie came out when I was about 11, but there's no way my parents...
I was 7.
There's no way.
I mean, I probably didn't watch it then. Anyway, the movie we are discussing this week is The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
A 1992 classic.
It is. I remember it growing up. I mean, I was young.
I'd heard the name.
It was probably one of those films that, like, my parents... It was on TV and my parents were like, oh, she's watching a nice film about gardening.
About a babysitter and gardening.
Yeah, it's all fine. And didn't realise exactly what it was. I managed to watch quite a lot of horror films when I was young that way.
I mean, the title is really famous, so I've definitely heard the title before, but no, I had never seen it.
Yeah, so
just to give you the, you know, official description... from IMDb, after her humiliated husband kills himself, an embittered pregnant widow loses her child and embarks on a mission of vengeance against a woman and her family. This is quite vague. I don't know if that would have sold it to me had I just read that. But directed by Curtis Hanson, starring Annabella Scoria, Rebecca De Mornier, and Matt McCoy as the oftentimes clueless husband.
I mean... Fairly clueless.
Yeah. This movie was an absolute, I don't know, clusterfuck of feminist tropes.
It has not aged well.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it hasn't aged well. Oh, and by the way, it didn't even say here on the cast, but it also stars, where is he? Winston from the Ghostbusters.
Yes, it does.
Also known as Ernie Hudson.
And Julianne Moore.
And Julianne Moore, yes. Who we love in a smallish role, but yeah, it's a bit of a minefield.
Yes, yeah. And
also, we were sort of discussing what sort of trigger warnings we want to put on certain episodes. We will obviously write it on the show notes so that before you even start listening, you will be given a heads up. But
yeah,
massive trigger warnings when we go into the breakdown portion of the podcast.
Yeah. And, like, I'd like to think that, like, most people will have seen this now, as it is...
quite a bit old.
Yeah. You know, it's going on 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't seen it, but yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, but of course we will warn you before we go into any spoilers.
Yeah, and it definitely, you know, so trigger warning from here on out, it definitely contains, you know, sexual assault,
Victim blaming,
almost they imply that there is some level of, like, I don't know, not pedophilia, but
inappropriate behavior
towards a little girl.
It's there, and
definitely there.
There's lots and lots of things.
Absolutely. So, without further ado, if you have not seen the movie, perhaps you want to stop the podcast now.
Pause us.
Because we're about to get into the breakdown, where we really go through the movie and sort of analyze it as we go.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
Yes, there will be spoilers from here on in.
From here on out. Oh, do you know what? We didn't even give our score. How many pentagrams? we'll say it. How many do you give this
How
movie?
Many pentacles?
Yeah.
Guys, we might have to change the scoring system. She can't even get it right.
How many hearts and stars?
How many hearts and stars? How many kisses?
How many flames?
Okay, I'm going to give this 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on this one. I would give it a 3 out of 5. I wonder if, had we watched it in 1992 as adults, as the intended audience was, would we have felt differently?
Yeah, because I watched it in the 90s. I mean, maybe not in 1992 because I was 7, but, you know, I remember watching it in the 90s when it was a fairly newish film. And all I can remember is the woman falling... Well, I thought someone fell through the greenhouse, but I just got that modelled up in my head. I remember the greenhouse, and I remember, like... But there were certain things that I just didn't pick up on when I was a kid watching it.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I would give it a solid 3. It does the job. I was perhaps not terrified, but there were there were sort of scary moments, I suppose. And above all things, as you pointed out last episode, it was entertaining.
It was.
You know, it kept me entertained. I don't know if it was the 90s outfits or...
I mean, that opening sequence was like the most 90s. Even the font was 90s. Like, could the font be 90s? But it was. It absolutely was.
The font of the text on the screen. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Graham Revel doing the... doing the sound.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the guy on his bike with his...
Ernie Hudson.
It was a chicken hut. I was very confused.
I thought it was a dollhouse. We're still not sure. I think it was for tools.
It was his toolbox, but when we first saw it, I was like, is he pulling a box of chickens?
Okay. Well, let's get into it. So, the movie opens... with him pulling a chicken coop, what appears to be a tiny chicken coop.
Or a doll's house for chickens.
On his bike, and it's actually neither of those things. It appears to be some sort of tool.
He's like a handyman.
He's a handyman for the... Well, and you know, having said that, it has not aged well.
Yeah,
so he plays a man with learning disabilities. A man... You know, with special needs, maybe is words. He's definitely not like Down syndrome or anything, but he is. Yeah. So he lives or works for this shelter called Happy Homes or Happy.
Yeah, I think it was Happy Homes.
We just watched this. You can tell we really paid attention. But he volunteered there or something, and so they would send the people out to do work around the neighborhoods, and so he was assigned. To the main character is called Claire and her husband Michael, I believe. Claire and Michael. And they have a daughter, Emma, and he was assigned to go and help them build a fence. So he rocks up, and the opening, not opening scene, but one of the very early scenes is that there's a black man in our backyard. And so they have a bit of a moment of panic because, you know, it's the 90s. God forbid you have a black man in your yard.
Yeah. So, my note just literally says, white people scared of black man.
100%. Yeah. And if this was real life, they probably would call the police. Be like, I'm calling the police.
Just shot him.
Like a Karen. A Karen of the 2000s. So, anyway, he arrives and all is set to rights, and they realize that he's there as a volunteer to help them build a fence. Happy days.
So Claire, the mum, she is pregnant, and she goes to see a new doctor.
Yes,
a new gynecologist.
A new obstetrician.
That's the word.
Who promptly fills her up, basically.
Yeah.
Sexually assaults her. And she's not having it, and I'm glad for it. So she's not having it. So she goes home. She tells her husband. The husband's like, we're pursuing this. This is bullshit. You don't have to put up with this. It's the 90s. And so they call the police, and it turns out 4 or 5 other women have come forward and complained about him as well. Skip to the next scene, and this obstetrician, who's called Dr. Mott.
Dr. Mott.
Which is a brand of apple juice in America. Yeah. Mott's, which is all I could think about when he said his name was Dr. Mott. And so he kills himself.
Yes.
Oh, trigger warning, suicide.
Oh, yeah.
We'll add it in the notes. So he Yeah, he shoots himself, and his wife is overcome with grief, and so she loses the baby.
Well, she loses the baby because he killed himself. She doesn't get anything.
Oh, interesting, right. It wasn't the loss of her husband.
No, it wasn't the loss of her husband. She lost her house.
The loss of her assets.
Yeah, because everything was going to go to cover the lawsuits.
That's right.
And then she loses her baby, and during, you know, the emergency cesarean, she ends up having to have a hysterectomy, so she can't have any children.
Right.
So she loses her husband, she loses her baby, she loses all her future children. She loses everything. And
yeah,
she's in the hospital, and there's a news report about the lawsuits being placed against her deceased husband, and it points in, it shows the woman, Claire, and it says that even though she was the first person that came forward, she's not looking for any money, she just wanted to report him.
Right.
And that's when...
And that's when we move on to the, I don't know, second portion of the film, if you will, where the embittered widow, as she was referred to in the description, poses as a nanny to come and help Claire with her new baby.
Yes.
I did think, my criticism here, is that she was way, way, way too...
I mean,
trusting, easygoing,
this
and
film
open.
Could literally be renamed Neglectful Parents, because there were so many points in this film where it's like, yeah, so she gets talking to, you know, Mrs. Motts, who she thinks is called Peyton.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Peyton? Yeah, I've written. Yeah, Peyton.
Peyton / Mrs. Motts.
Yeah. And, you know, she starts talking to her outside, and she's chatting to her, and having only had a brief conversation with this woman. And no references, no, you know, police checks or anything. She's like, oh, someone's downstairs. Here, hold my new baby, stranger. And I'm going to leave you alone with my 3-month-old baby.
She also says, what made you get into nannying? And then Mrs. Mott / Peyton is like, oh, I lost my husband and my child a year ago.
Yeah.
And... I'll never be a mother. And for me, that'd be like, red flag, red flag, red flag. Like, she's coming to steal my baby.
Yeah.
But no. The wife is like, oh, you poor thing. Come right in.
Here, have my baby.
Here, hold my baby. So, and there you have it. And from there on, she is sort of, she moves in, basically.
Yeah, she moves in. Downstairs. She's a living nanny. And she starts doing things. Now, one of the things that I do quite like about this film, and it might sound strange, but I do love how much breastfeeding there is in it.
There is a fair amount of breastfeeding, yeah.
You know, it's not something I remember seeing much on TV in the 90s.
Fair enough, yeah.
So I quite like that. But, you know, there is the whole thing where she starts breastfeeding the baby.
Mrs. Mott / Peyton.
Yeah, Peyton. She's getting up at night, sneaking into the baby's room, and she's breastfeeding the baby.
Yeah, she's using her milk from her lost child.
Yeah, she's like been pumping and things to keep a supply in.
And to bond with the baby.
Yeah. So, and you know, she does bond, but she spends all night nursing the baby. So in the end, he doesn't want to go to his, you know, he can only be settled by her.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's when the creepiness starts. So she starts breastfeeding the baby. She starts having like secrets with the little girl.
Yeah, turning the other kid, the daughter, sort of
against her mom. Yeah. I mean, one thing that I was, another thing I was very surprised by, and fair enough, it was the 90s. Maybe, you know, maybe security at schools wasn't as... strict as I think now. But there's a scene where the little girl tells Peyton, the nanny, that she's been bullied by this little boy, and she's like, oh, my mum tried to go into the school, but nothing happened. So Peyton just walks, you know, the kids are playing on the playground, and Peyton just walks into the school, grabs this little boy, like, strong arms him round the corner, and almost breaks his arm. This, like, 7-year-old kid, she's, like, throwing him around the place, and then just walks off.
No one seemed to
notice. No adults. Like, there was no one on, like, playground duty, like, supervising.
Yeah,
it's the 90s. Yeah, they'll be fine. Oh, there's 3 less kids. Oh, well, a man with a van came, you know? Yeah.
Well, yeah, so that scene. I mean, there were just some unbelievable kind of parts in it, but...
Yeah.
So then she just begins to really, I don't know, sort of hook her, sink her claws into the family by, yeah. you know, planning a surprise party for the mom and trying to endear herself to the husband.
But yeah, she's like planning the surprise party, but she starts doing all the things towards Claire to make her doubt herself and think she's going crazy, but then for other people to also think that she's like losing it.
She's pretty sneaky, that Peyton, Mrs. Mott.
Yeah.
She's pretty sneaky. And she, and it is kind of a slow build up, which I liked, that it started off with kind of small things like, oh, I found your earring in the baby's mouth. She didn't.
Yeah, here, like, I'm going to post my husband's, you know, incredibly important work document that's got to be in today. And she steals it and tears it up.
And throws it away. Yeah. And then she also, yeah, starts kind of, there's this kind of subplot with Julianne Moore as the husband's ex-girlfriend, who's now a very good family yeah. friend that they hang out with. What was her name? Marlena, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, anyway, she, yeah, it's this kind of whole subplot involving her where, you know, Peyton slash Mrs. Mott sort of leads Claire to believe that there's something going on. She manages to heighten some things that are already really happening, like the husband hanging out with Marlena and yeah. smoking cigarettes. And so she puts a lighter in his pocket that the wife finds. And these little kind of insidious things that start to build over time. Yeah, culminating in, eventually Marlena, Julianne Moore, discovers the real identity of Peyton slash Mrs. Maltz, and confronts her.
Yeah.
Oh, and we didn't even mention, like, one of the most important bits, which is that Solomon, who's played by Winston slash Ernie, I always say Eddie, Ernie Hudson. So Ernie Hudson, who's helping them build the fence, remember we said the special needs guy, Peyton hides like a pair of the little girl's underwear in his work station, and the mom finds it. And
yeah, because she's already been like dropping little, like whispering in her ear saying, oh, yeah. I don't like the way he touches your little girl. You know, it's just a bit strange. And she's like planting these seeds of doubt. And that's what she does. She just manipulates everything so she can plant seeds of doubt in everybody's minds. So that they all, you know, don't see what's happening.
Exactly. And but so, yeah. yeah, so all of that sort of culminates in Marlena figures out who she really is. And then she empties all of Claire's inhalers. Because Claire has asthma. So she empties all the inhalers and Claire has an asthma attack. And ends up in the hospital. Yeah. Although she survives.
Well, it's because, so Peyton had set up a trap in the greenhouse to make the windows shatter and kill Claire. But when Claire doesn't go in there and Marlene turns up and is, you know, confronting Peyton.
Yeah.
Peyton sends her in there saying that she thinks Claire's in there. And the glass shatters and she gets killed. And then when Claire comes home, Peyton's emptied all the inhalers out, and so when Claire finds her dead friend, she has an asthma attack.
Starts to, like,
the asthma attack yeah. really got to me.
Why? What do you mean?
Like, I just love the fact that there was nothing holding her back. You know, she was just trying to desperately. She was running out of air, and she's crawling around the house.
Yeah.
And she kept like finding her inhaler. She's like, "It's fine. I've got my inhaler." And then it wouldn't work. And then she'd scramble around to another drawer and find another one, and it wouldn't work. And it was just like this horrible realization that
there was quite a lot yeah. of tension. Yeah, absolutely.
That was one of my favorite scenes.
After she gets out of the hospital, after the inhaler scene,
yeah.
where she's, which you're right, it was pretty harrowing when she's lying on yeah. the floor. They made her look really sickly and dying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, and she was like, you could hear her like
gasping for breath. Yeah,
and it was just the fear of like she just found, you know, she knows something's not right because she's been saying, you know, something's weird, like the baby isn't right. You know,
yeah, yeah.
My little girl has secrets from me. She knows that something kind of the rot is there somewhere, and she's trying to figure out where it's coming from.
Yeah.
So she already has this kind of anxiety to her, and then she finds like her friend who she's just accused in front of all these people at a surprise party of having an affair with her husband.
Yeah,
so everyone immediately,
that was an awkward scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then of course she gets out of the hospital, comes back, and starts to put the pieces together.
Yeah, she like goes to Marlena's office and finds out what she, and then she sees the listing. When she sees who owned it, she obviously knows and it clicks, and then she...
Well, she goes to look at the house, and she sees that the kid's bedroom... So that this is the house that used to belong to the doctor and Peyton slash Mrs. Mott. And she goes in and she can see in the kid's bedroom, it's the exact same decor as what's in her kid's bedroom now, because Peyton has redecorated. And so, she kind of puts the pieces together.
Yeah.
And comes rushing home and is like, Michael, and then confronts Peyton, punches her in the face.
Yep. I was like, yes.
Yes, that was a good scene.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, Claire. And then, of course, they make her leave and call the police, but it's not an emergency. So then, of course, she comes back. Peyton comes back.
Yeah.
Because that's her family.
It's my family.
That's her family. And so she proceeds to attempt to kill them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were, the build up to it, there were a few things, you know, the husband in this, Michael, is fairly useless. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I quite liked that in some ways, but he's fairly useless, he's fairly clueless, but I did like the fact that, you know, you could see that he was attracted to Peyton and she was quite clearly coming on to him, but he rejected her. She didn't realise at the time that she was being rejected, but then she was, and then he rejected her again, and both times he believed his wife, like, pretty much straight away. You know,
yeah,
at the beginning,
yeah.
when she's like, my doctor molested me, and he's like, well, are you sure? Like, trust yourself.
Yeah.
Like, straight away. And the same when she comes in and she's like, you know, Peyton, it's Peyton doing this. It doesn't take a lot to convince him.
It's true.
And I did like that. I thought that was something you definitely didn't see a lot back in the, you know, in the early
90s. Not so much, yeah.
I can't really think of.
Yeah, agree. But he was still, you know.
Oh, he was still useless at the end. Like, immediately, like, straight away, within 10 minutes of them kicking out the crazy woman who, like, says something really creepy about the baby. Oh, let me just get my baby. I mean my things.
And they're like,
okay.
Yeah, no. They're like, you're not getting your things. We'll mail them to you.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Get out.
My baby, I mean my things.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that whenever I leave your house. Jenny, just give me 1 second to get my baby. I mean, my stuff together.
If I see you leaving with one of my cats.
Those are all the babies we have at the moment. Just cats. I just have plants, actually.
I have cats and plants.
But and then you have the, you know, climactic scene, the confrontation
between the two women. Because, that's the thing. Immediately after kicking out this, like, crazy woman, they're in the house and Claire's getting the kids together because they're going to go stay somewhere else. Because, again, Michael believes Claire when she's like, no, we can't stay here, you know.
Yeah, we need to go.
We need to be away from here. You know, he doesn't argue it. He's like, yeah, sure, let's go away for a little bit. And then you're like, okay, maybe you're going to actually be of some use during this film. No.
No.
He starts hearing some music from the basement where Peyton's room was and goes down there and... Shock, she's there, and hits him in the head with a shovel.
He immediately investigates a strange noise.
Yeah.
And shocker, it doesn't go well.
No, it does not. he gets hit on the head with a shovel, and he falls on the stairs, and...
Breaks both his legs.
I've broken my legs.
I've broken both my legs. My legs, they're broken.
Yeah.
He gave us some, like, star quality acting in that moment, and so Jenny and I couldn't stop repeating it. My legs. They're broken. He's like, run, Claire.
Get the children and run. Well, what else has she been doing? She has literally been, like, running around.
The whole
film.
And then you've got Emma, who's like, I don't know, you said 7. I thought maybe even younger. But
I'd say between... She's in...
Like 5 and 7.
Yeah, between 5 and 7.
So you've got the youngest daughter who has the wherewithal to hide the baby.
Yes.
Good one.
And not just hide the baby. So she, when Peyton comes back and, like, Emma sees Peyton attacking her mum, but, you know, at this point, up until this point, she's actually been kind of, her mind's been twisted so that she prefers Peyton to her mum at this point.
Right, she's confused.
So she's very confused, but yet she still is like, when Peyton's like, oh, come on, let's get, like, you and the baby, let's go. She's still like, okay, yeah. And not only has she hidden the baby, but she locks locks Peyton in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's got the baby and she hides, so she tricks her with the baby monitor. She puts the baby monitor somewhere.
She follows the noise of the crying baby on the monitor.
Yeah.
She also, there's also a moment where Peyton breaks through the locked door, which is very The Shining-esque.
Yes.
Although she's using some sort of poker from a fireplace.
Oh, she was
maybe?
Using a crowbar.
Oh, was it a crowbar? Okay.
Yeah.
Some sort of stick. And so, yeah, beats a hole through the door.
There is a lot of, because there's a couple of scenes where she kind of starts beating things.
Like she's got a temper on her.
Yeah, yeah, like the rage in that woman.
I mean, listen, she needs therapy, really. Yeah. She suffered a lot of loss, a lot of trauma. It's hard to feel sorry for her because she's trying to steal people's babies, but, you know, empathy is important.
Mm-hmm.
She could do with a bit of counseling, probably. Yeah. Grief counseling. But yeah, so that's pretty much what happens. And I know that I had huge problems with the very obvious tropes. You know, and the roles that these women were playing. Like, it's no coincidence in my mind that the villain of this was childless. Yep. And also, at one point, she mentioned that she didn't have a mother. She lost her mother when she was very young. So she's motherless and childless.
Yeah.
Which definitely makes you a villain.
Yeah.
According to, I don't know, 90s horror movie tropes. And then you've got Claire, the wife, who's very innocent and vulnerable in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and you know, she naive. She doesn't work, but she volunteers at the botanical gardens, and she just loves to grow things. And
loves
she
it.
And but then again, like she's
also
very soft and nurturing. But then she's like,
she
doesn't work. So she doesn't have like a career and a job. So it's like when she gets the nanny, it's so that she can spend time doing what she. Things that she enjoys that aren't her children. And I feel like the film was instantly going, so you don't, you know, you're not a career woman. You're not, you know, you're not solely a mother, therefore you're going to get punished because you're...
Well, and even the idea that, like, God forbid you have something else in your life
exactly.
other than your children.
Exactly.
You know, and now your child will no longer settle when you try to comfort him
because
you're
like
a bad mother.
And you're even more selfish than the working mother because you did it just for your own enjoyment, you know.
Right, exactly. So
and
I did think
punish you by taking your family away from you.
Yeah, so there was a lot of really obvious kind of things like that. I mean, I did think that the character sort of lacked nuance in that way. But I don't know. I also found her extremely accommodating to everyone around her. Just, you know, she didn't want to make anybody uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I got that feeling, which we all understand that feeling, but,
yeah.
It also made her, I think, a little frustrating to watch. I felt a little frustrated watching her.
Yeah.
Although I was really glad when she punched Peyton in the face. That was good.
That was a good
Peyton
scene.
Peyton went flying over the table.
Yeah.
That was good.
Because she was there like, oh, I've made dinner, and I've done this, and I've done that, and it's like...
I've breastfed your baby for you.
Yeah. I've looked after your husband.
But yeah, I mean, so a solid 3 stars, pentacles, pentagrams from
me. There was some good bits in it.
There were, and there were some kind of parts where you had a bit of tension or parts where, just you weren't really sure. I don't know. I was going to say you weren't really sure what she was going to do, but that's not true. I do feel like quite a lot of it was fairly predictable.
Yeah.
The acting was good. I'll give it that. All around, I feel like the acting was good. I love Julianne Moore's cell phone in the car.
Yes. I was mesmerized throughout most of the film by the fact that in any scene with Peyton and Michael, they had the bluest eyes.
They did have really blue eyes, yeah.
And it was like, I almost like zoned out, like...
There was a lot of blue eyes in the film, yeah.
There's a lot of blue eyes, like Village of the Damn Shit.
But I did think, like, Annabella Scoria, who played the lead Claire, I thought she was very good. Rebecca De Mornay, like, believable. Yeah, good acting. I mean, I don't think I could give it too much more than 3 stars, and I don't think it's something that I would watch or, like, reach for.
Yeah.
You know, as far as... And question, do you consider it a horror, like a full-blown horror?
No, I would say it's more of a thriller.
Like a psychological...
Yeah.
Thriller, yeah.
You know, it was very much in line with other films of, you know, like, single white female.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it did raise some interesting questions about sort of, like, motherhood and what that role includes and, grief and trauma and how we process those things and wanting to belong and wanting a family. And there was even a part where she said something like, my husband, this is Peyton / Mrs. Mott, she's like, my husband understood me.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, what did he understand? And vice versa. Did she know about his...
Yeah, that he was...
Like, assault? Like, yeah. He was assaulting his patients? Like, maybe she knew. Maybe they were some kind of fucked up couple together. Like, that sort of made me question, like, the meaning behind that line, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or whether there was extra meaning behind that line. But yeah, all in, I'd say nothing hugely special, but not bad. I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah.
Because it's a classic.
It's one of those films that, like, you hear about all the time, and I've seen it, but I saw it when I was so young.
It is referenced, and the title apparently comes from a poem. What did they say? The hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world?
Yeah.
Something like that, which I kind of liked. The power of the mother.
The power of the mother.
The power of the breast milk.
Like, yeah.
I wonder if that can legitimately happen, where you breastfeed a kid and then that kid prefers you because you're breastfeeding it.
Probably. There's so much stuff in breast milk.
Yeah.
That, like, links you to your child.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if there's another line that Peyton said towards the end that it was like, you can't, when your husband has sex with you, it's my face he sees. And when your baby wants food, it's from my breast. And now you can't even breathe. And it's like...
those kind of lines to me, and I said this actually while we were watching it, veers almost into camp territory.
Yeah.
And I have an appreciation for camp.
So do I, but...
In the right place and at the right
time.
Yeah,
like, to me, that line was like, oh, basically, so what, a woman is essentially something to be desired and fucked. Something to birth and sustain a child.
And provide comfort for a child. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's it.
That's all we do.
That's it. And you can't do... If you can't do those things, then...
I mean, we don't really have much else going on.
No.
I mean, those are the things that I live for.
Yeah. Birthing and sustaining children.
Hey, the 90s. Hey, I don't know. I mean, yeah. There was definitely that implication. I mean... And their roles were really... Even she, prior to her... You know, this is... I'm talking about Peyton. Miscarrying and losing her husband. Like, there was no talk about if she had a job or any way to live. It was like, oh, we're seizing all your husband's assets. You're out the house.
Yeah.
So I guess she owned nothing and her name was on nothing and she did no work and she contributed nothing besides getting pregnant. Like, I don't know. So, yeah, that's what I mean. When we said at the beginning it was sort of fraught... It was a little bit of a minefield in terms of these feminist tropes and whatnot. Like, yeah, definitely problematic.
Yes.
And in some ways. Yeah.
In many ways.
In many ways, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Not the best kind of representation of women in this film.
No. But there's been so many worse. Like, I just...
Oh, yeah, but still, a lot of this is like, oh, you know, Every man that sees Peyton, you know, around the house, all Michael's friends are like, oh yeah, like, I want kids. Like, she's a very desirable, seems very desirable. And his wife, you know, Peyton sets it up so she can't wear the dress that she feels sexy in. But yeah, his wife is...
Did she set that up?
I must have
missed that part.
So she's getting ready and Peyton gets some like hand cream or something and puts it on the dress. Staying it.
I missed that.
Yes.
That bitch.
Yes.
That's when I'd fire her right then.
Yeah. Well, she obviously doesn't know.
I'd be like, I don't really mind you breastfeeding my kid, but don't fuck with my red dress.
Exactly. This is my sex fire dress.
That's like, she wears that and she goes out with her husband. She knows she's getting some.
Exactly.
He knows too.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah.
He was disappointed.
That was why he was really sad. He's like, oh.
What's with this dowdy, flowery house dress you're wearing?
She's like, looks like one of Blossom's hats.
It did look like one of Blossom's hats. It was right around that time. Maybe they shared a studio.
Fabric.
Yeah, so The Hand That Rocked the Cradle. Yeah, I liked it. It was entertaining. It was a little campy here and there.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm glad we watched it.
So, me too.
Three stars. Solid three.
Three stars,
solid three pentagrams from me.
Yes.
And then we have one more not one more, but we have another episode coming yes. next week. We haven't decided yet if we're going to actually review The Devil Down Under. Again, please pop into our comment section.
Yeah, if you've seen it. Like,
if you want to hear a review of it, or if you have any suggestions for us, of anything you'd like for us to review. Otherwise, we're going to have a think and get back at it. I know we're going to review The Witch.
Yes.
Upcoming, we've got The Witch. We're going to do Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. We want to hit on some of the big, more kind of feminist movies. And then talk about what makes them feminist or not. And I would say that this is decidedly not.
Oh, absolutely not.
A feminist movie.
No.
And it's interesting because it was written by a woman.
Yeah.
But directed by a man.
Yeah.
And I don't know much about the director, what else he's done, if he's like a horror guy. Curtis Hanson. 8 Mile. Oh, he did LA Confidential. Which I love that movie. Evil Town, 1977. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
In Her Shoes. And then in the 2000s, he veers into romantic comedies. Well, I don't really think there's much else to say about The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Any final thoughts, last words?
It just really was not. It was such a bad, literally the only likable woman, female in that film was Emma, the kid. Child.
See, I sort of liked Peyton. Just for the bold audacity of it all.
The balls of just being like, I'm going to be your nanny.
Absolute balls to just rock up to the house. And as a woman, disregarding completely the pain and trauma her husband must have inflicted, not only on Claire, but on at least 4 other women.
Well, that's...
There was no, this is the thing, they could have gone deeper into some of that, and they really didn't,
They basically was like, she was sat in the hotel after she'd had a hysterectomy and lost her baby, and in the hospital, sorry, not the hotel, and she's watching the TV and she sees that picture of Claire, and it's like, oh, that she ruined my life. Not your husband who's been molesting pregnant patients.
Right. Let's not blame the men here.
No, absolutely not.
They're busy,
not.
Doing important things.
Exactly.
Like being a doctor.
Yeah.
So, it must be Claire's fault.
It must be her fault because she had, the audacity to go to my husband's office and get molested by him.
But yeah, it seems like there was no... She had no guilt or... She had no feelings about that part of it whatsoever. It was all revolving around the fact, I think, that she lost her baby.
Yeah.
And how could she get her baby back? I'll go steal this woman's baby. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even that premeditated. Who knows? She was pretty sneaky, though.
It definitely was. Because
it seems like there was a strategy.
Because remember, they said that, at the beginning, she could stay in the house until she'd had the baby. And because it was 6 months after... she kind of lost the baby that she moved into the house, and to keep her milk going, she'd been
pumping.
So the whole time she knew that she was going to get revenge somehow.
Right.
Because why else would she have kept her milk in?
Right. Good call. So there was a strategy at play there.
Yeah. Whether she knew exactly.
Yeah. Well, there was also, I think, space for touching on other kind of important topics, and not just the woman. I mean, here she is kind of left to deal with all the mess that her husband created.
Yeah.
Peyton is left to deal with it, and they chose not to cover that at all. They just turned to her, it could have been a much more nuanced, fascinating.
Yeah, she was very
villain study, but
very flat.
Very flat, and it lacked, I think, a lot of any kind of nuance. Even with Claire, as I say, she's a good woman, she does good things.
Yeah.
She believes people. She believes in the good in people, and she's kind and sweet, and you didn't really see any other kind of side to her.
No.
And then, except maybe when she accuses her husband, but even then they built Julianne Moore up a little bit. She's the ex-girlfriend. She smokes cigarettes. She's a bad influence.
She's career-focused. She doesn't want... She doesn't have children.
Yeah.
She,
Yeah. She deserves to be punished.
Yes.
But yeah,
basically, it's a film that likes to punish women.
Yeah, pretty much.
Every woman gets punished.
Except the wife. Well, and even then, she gets punished too. But,
yeah.
The wife, she's good. So mm-hmm. she survives, and she survives with her family intact and her kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that kind of bored me, I suppose, like all of those really obvious roles and everyone playing their bit. But still entertaining, as they say, and I enjoyed when it got a little bit campy, because I like that.
I was very much enjoying the 90s outfits.
Oh, yeah. I love a long cable knit sweater.
Yep.
Unbuttoned with a sort of flowing long skirt. That is a vibe.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just think even the music, like, added nothing. I didn't think there were any particularly interesting shots or cutaways or edits or anything that was, you know, more than just bare-bones storytelling.
Yeah. There was nothing.
And they did that sufficiently.
Yes.
Not even necessarily well, but the execution
was
sufficient.
At one point, I felt like there was a really weird, like the sound was weirdly overlapped.
Oh, when they were doing her wheezing.
Yeah, and there was, like, it was weird. There was something.
There were moments where she's having a asthma attack, or she's losing her breath and she's wheezing, and it's like she's doing the movement where you kind of believe her, but not really with her mouth.
Yeah.
Because when you wheeze like that, like your whole body kind of goes, you know, I'm doing a breathing motion, using my whole body, but you know you couldn't really see that, and so then they sort of overlaid this sound on top of it, and it was a bit strange and it didn't really flow. And then there were a couple other moments where someone's back would be to the camera but they would be speaking, but you could tell it didn't go, like,
yeah,
mouth
it didn't match.
Wasn't going, it didn't match. Yeah, perhaps these are just bad edits. I mean,
yeah,
who knows. But yeah
it's
so nothing spectacular here.
No,
but
and from a feminist point, not
listen,
at all.
If you've not seen it, have an edible, sit down, enjoy the show. But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way or, like, pay to see it.
No.
Like that.
It was on Prime.
Yeah but
free,
for a
free
little...
On.
Free on Prime, but for a little bit of a 90s throwback.
Yeah.
A little bit of a thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah, get into it.
And something a bit different from what I normally watch.
Yeah, there was no gore.
No.
Really, you know. No one being tortured.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, well...
No one's eyeball fell out.
No one's eyeball got melted into their face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one walked on nails.
Or put popcorn kernels under their knees. It's a pretty tame, I'd say.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, there you have it. Episode 2 in the books. Join us next week, won't
and
you?
And please let us know if there's any film that you recommend for us to watch. We've probably seen it, but you know,
maybe we haven't. Any thoughts on kind of what we've been doing so far?
Yes,
but we thank you for listening. We love you, and we're signing off.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.